We want to give you Signal Not Noise because the main event hasn't arrived. The main event is now upon us, and that main event is the vaccines in the vaccine passports. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer, okay? First off, as a kid, but more importantly, in the military, you didn't really have a choice. So I know a lot of anti-vaxxers. I hear the arguments. I'm certainly vaccine hesitant, right? Because I don't actually understand the logic of what they're talking about, right? Of how they actually get there, particularly when you're talking about people that have had the, you know, now they're admitting if you've had the virus before, you don't need it. But it just seems to me so much misinformation. It's such a forced way they're trying to get people incentivized, even by giving $1 million, free college. And of course, the vaccine rates are collapsing. That's why you're seeing, going to see this fall. And Fauci, we're the ones that broke it on that AP story. Fauci saying, hey, the kids are all going to be, the 12 to 15s are going to start being vaccinated as soon as they get back to school. And his quote, the children will be vaccinated by the end of the year, and that'll get them up to the herd immunity, because you need 80 or 90% of the people vaxxed. Whereas they don't calculate the basic thing of herd immunity from the very first day of the show was the natural immunity that builds up from having the virus. So it's nothing but a constant bombardment of information that just doesn't make sense. And that's where the common sense of the American people are going to say, hey. And that's where you're seeing these mothers stand up now for the mask situation and for critical race theory. You have not seen the firestorm when you start to either have forced vaccinations of the children, or the children are kind of othered by not having the vaccination. So we want to get back to it. And that's the first guest we reached out. Somebody we've kind of studied what everything he said online and other things. It's Mike Yeadon, joins us from England. He was on the other day. Mike, just to start off with, because we always like to say, tell people, hey, if it's about the election fraud, we want to make sure it's in a court case or make sure it's something sanctioned by a state legislature. It's just not people on YouTube or people throwing out concepts and ideas. This actually has a place to adjudicate it. We have to show evidence. I want to make sure, you worked at Pfizer, but I want you to walk through briefly your academic background, your work at Pfizer, and then afterwards you started your own company, I think sold it for $350 million, a biotech company. Walk through your bona fides in this area, sir.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve, for having me back again. So yes, Dr. Mike Yeadon, my first degree is a joint honours biochemistry and toxicology. And I got not just the first class honours, I got the highest first class the university ever awarded. I followed that by a 3-year research-based PhD. That was respiratory pharmacology. It was partly funded actually by the military. After that PhD, I worked for 7 years at the Wellcome Research Labs until they merged with Glaxo, which went on to become GSK. And at that time, I went to Pfizer in the UK, and I was there 17 years. I finished as their vice president and chief scientist of allergy and respiratory research. So I was responsible for the worldwide research and development up to clinical proof of concept across the whole company. And then after that, I left them 10 years ago on very good terms, by the way. I loved working with Pfizer. For the last 10 years, 5 of those years, I started, raised all the money for and led as CEO a biotech called Ziarko. We acquired a compound from my former portfolio at Pfizer that was surplus. We converted it into a dermatology asset, and we sold it to Novartis, the world's biggest drug company, for roughly $350 million. At least that's the rumored sum. I'm not allowed to tell you the actual sum, but it was pretty good. And then along in that 10 years, I've consulted to 30 startup biotech companies, 2 of which are now public, Apellis Pharmaceuticals and Pulmatrix.
So if I had, as an investment banker, my Goldman Sachs hat, if we had to reach out to a consultant on an M&A project, you would consider yourself to be among the top practitioners in the world, not just theoreticians in universities, but people that actually go to work for these big pharmaceutical companies and actually have to take theoretical science and use applied research to actually get products in the field, correct? That is, I would take it, your specialty?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So we originated programs in-house, but I also led for 10 years the in-licensing team at Pfizer. So we reviewed 100 companies in that 10 years, and we did 3 deals.
Perfect. This is that. Okay. My point. This is a guy. That's not some guy up on YouTube talking smack. This is one of the top professionals in the world from the heart of the industry. This is what we call a subject matter expert with credentials that cannot be questioned. because it's just, they're so on every level, whether it's the academic background, the years at the big corporations, grinding it out, going out as an entrepreneur, really doing a lot what he did in the lab, creating a great company, selling, and everyone, whether it's Glaxo or Wellcome or Novartis or Pfizer, this is the creme de la creme. You're playing at the highest level, okay? So, yeah. Dr. Mike Eaton, I then want to go through, make your case about your problem as a professional about this whole vaccine problem, how it originated, where we stand, and where you think it's headed, sir.
Yeah, certainly. I can do that quickly. So I'm very pro-vaccines. I'm particularly pro-safe medicines. And my biggest beef with the vaccines includes serious concerns about safety. But I've just got 3 points to make about the vaccines. In absolute honesty, I don't think they're even necessary. Why are they not necessary? Well, that's because there are at least 4 or 5 safe and effective medicines, and their presence has been suppressed and hidden from the public. So they're not really necessary. The next is, it's not even clear if they're effective enough. The trials have been done in a really strange way where they used, say, PCR positivity as the endpoint with one minor symptom. So most people think if a vaccine works, it saves you from serious disease or death. And those things were not measured in the trial. So I'm not saying they don't work. I'm saying the data is not clear. And then finally, they have not been sufficiently tested. They have been approved for emergency use, fraudulently in my view, because they shouldn't do it if there are safe and effective medicines, and there are, they've just been hidden. So it's an emergency use only, and that means they've been plucked from the middle of late stage development. They've still got about 1.5 years of clinical phase to run, and they normally collect safety information as well as efficacy information. We don't have that data because we're already out inoculating a billion people. But along the way, we've gathered some safety concerns, Steve.
Okay. Hang on a second, Dr. Yan. I want to go back to something. Because you come from the industry, and you've actually made money on things that relate to vaccines. You say you're pro-vaccine, right? You're not an anti-vaxxer crusader.
Absolutely.
You're not even vaccine hesitant if it's proper. But I want to go back to your first point, because this is where people say, hey, I see on TV and I see all these prominent scientists, and they work with all these big companies, and they seem like solid citizens. And in the managerial expert world we live in, they're presented by experts, by NBC and CNN and Time Warner and the New York Times, and all this expert after expert. I want to go back to your first point. You said it was suppressed. What are the 2 or 3 things you think work? Why do you think they work? And why were they suppressed?
Okay, so hydroxychloroquine is a very common one, and it reduces viral replication. So when it's given at the early stages of infection, it definitely reduces the viral load in a person, makes it less likely they will progress. Sometimes they add zinc as well, because the hydroxychloroquine works by letting zinc into cells. Another major one is ivermectin, which is an off-patent antiparasitic. It also happens to have antiviral effects as well. Then the last two, I guess, would be azithromycin, which is an off-patent antimicrobial, but it also has anti-inflammatory properties, which we knew about. And then finally, inhaled steroids like budesonide that are commonly used in asthma. If you have those 4 drugs, Dr. Peter McCullough believes that almost no one who isn't right at the end of life needs to die of this virus. And why have they been suppressed? Steve, I don't know, but I think it's part of a fraud. I was on last week and I told you that all the main narrative points about the virus are, shall we say, adjacent to the truth, lies, frankly, designed to make people fearful. And I think suppressing the drugs, the treatments, has had 2 benefits for whoever's doing this. One is it makes people willing to take the vaccine, and it makes vaccines available much earlier than they otherwise would and should have been. So that's probably the motivation.
Let me add, what, because look, some of our stuff was taken down back in the spring, and some of, we would have some of the experts on here about hydroxy, ivermectin, the very things you're talking about, not the steroids, but the first 3, you know, we'd be taking down our Twitter account. How did the social media companies, what was their rationale, and what expert opinions did you ever hear of people that could back up everything that this was all voodoo, witchcraft, dangerous?
Yeah, I wasn't very close to this while it was going on. I was focusing last year on PCR testing, but I had a very good friend, a physician, Dr. Tess Laurie in the UK, And she was reporting that they were writing up reviews of, you know, collected clinical information from around the world. And it was clear in her case that ivermectin was working really well. And they were literally suppressing the manuscripts at journal level. So I'm talking about medical journals that you would think of as being beyond reproach. Someone was leaning on them and refusing to publish papers that were written to at least the same quality as everything else they were publishing. So you know, I'm afraid it was just, they were tortured.
But Dr. Yeadon, we always talk, science goes forward today with peer review journals. That's kind of the high priesthood. It's kind of the high priesthood of scientific knowledge. How could the high priesthood be corrupted? Because essentially what you're saying is, at even at that level, that there was suppression from outside. What outside forces do you believe? We got about 30 seconds. What outside forces do you think got into the the temple?
I think journals have been provided with a lot of money, sometimes actually acquired by interests that are now being manifest. And almost all scientists everywhere outside of industry, if they're in universities, they have to beg, steal for and borrow for their grants. So all the major granting bodies are also, I think, part of the pressurizing of this system. Scientific review only works when you release the pressure, and there's a lot of pressure on these people.
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to return with Dr. Michael Yeadon. Mike Yeadon was a senior scientist at Pfizer, one of the senior researchers, chief scientist for a number of areas. Impeccable credentials. We're going to return with his thoughts on the coming vaccine crisis next in the War Room. Okay, I want to return now to Dr. Mike Yeadon, formerly of Pfizer. Dr. Yeadon, there's going to be a fire. I don't know about the rest of the world, but I can guarantee you there's going to be a firestorm starting in August in this nation, the United States of America, when the mothers in this country that have already been up on this whole mask situation and critical race theory at the school board level, when they go back, and according to Dr. Fauci, this is not Stephen K. Bannon, this is Fauci's interviews with Savannah Guthrie at the morning show at NBC, the Today Show, also what he told the AP, that they're going to start vaccinating the 12 to 15-year-olds, the kids in middle school and high school, as soon as they get back in the fall, and that the school children will be vaccinated by the end of the year. His words, not Bannon's. I want you to walk through. There's going to be a firestorm because this is not the anti-vax crowd. I'm talking about the vaccine hesitant mothers, right? Joined with the anti-vaxxers. And that's, to me, is two-thirds of the country, two-thirds of the mothers. Walk us through your thoughts about this vaccine, particularly for adolescents and for school-aged children and younger.
Yeah, certainly. So just to reiterate, I'm of the industry my whole career, and I'm generally pro-vaccine, but I'm pro-safety. And these COVID-19 vaccines are not safe. Very briefly, they're not safe because the gene-based design makes your body manufacture virus spike protein. And we know, and we've known for years, that virus spike proteins trigger blood clots. So there's plenty of literature. No one can fault the statement I've just made. And Dr. Vodarg and I wrote to the European Medicines Agency in December pointing that out. So that's a fundamental problem. About 75% of the adverse events that occur after vaccination, which are very much higher than usual, relate to thromboembolic events, that is blood clots and bleeding. So what I've just said about the design and the property of spike protein exactly matches these serious adverse events that are emerging. Now, here's the real problem I've got, Steve, and I'm a father and a grandfather. Young people are not susceptible to COVID-19. If they acquire the virus, they usually have no symptoms and they shrug it off very easily. So they're not at risk. It's a crazy thing then to vaccinate them with something that is actually 50 times more likely to kill them than the virus itself. That statement.
Okay. Hang on a second. People are going to see, and look, I'm sure we're going to get grief from everybody, but I wanted you to back this up. People look on television. They see the government, they see it from the White House, but they see it on every network from morning to night. They see celebrities now, but more importantly, the celebrities are the TV personalities. They see people in white coats. They see scientists from the best universities in the world, okay, that absolutely are counter to what you're saying. They're saying, number one, this is safe, and number two, it is a necessity. It's safe and it's necessary. So I just want to go back. when you have so many prominent people, and I don't want to talk about what their intentions are, why they're doing it, but I want you to counter that with, I want you to point to facts, evidence, data that supports it's, they're not safe, number one, and number two, they're not necessary.
Absolutely. So on the not safe, you've got a pretty good adverse event monitoring system in the US. Perfect, but the VAERS system, I think, is at least transparent and anyone can enter. So at any stage over the last decade or so, if anyone has an adverse effect after vaccination with whatever vaccine, then they or a physician can enter a report. And we know that it only captures a low frequency of the adverse events. What we know, though, is if you look from about January of this year and compare month by month with any other month in the previous 10 years, the number of serious adverse events reported after COVID-19 vaccines is just enormous. I think it's between 50 and 100 times higher than previously. That's not my data. It's the US public data that any watcher can go and check in 5 minutes for themselves and check that I'm telling you the truth. And the serious adverse event I'm most concerned with is death. And I think you're running between 4,500 and 5,000 deaths in the last 6 months. You normally run at 200 a year for all vaccines combined.
Let me ask you one, the criticism that, oh, VAERS is just a raw data. You can't, because you see them coming on TV all the time. That's just raw data. And the guys are using that because they can cherry pick that. Is your, how do you defend the criticism that you're just cherry picking the data? That's all just raw. It's not filtered. It's not checked out. How do you counter that?
Yeah. So it's all, it is always raw. So basically it's an all comers system. There is no reason at all why more people would be reporting side effects now than previously. In fact, I would say it's less likely. I know personally of many people who've had, you know, minor side effects, pains in the leg or chest. That's not that that's minor. And their physician told them, no, absolutely not linked. Don't bother to report it in the UK yellow card system, which is the equivalent of VAERS. So there's no reason anyone can point to that says that the run rate, you know, the reporting rate is going to be different after this vaccine than any other, if anything, on the downside. And yet the number of deaths per million vaccinations is running small difference. It's appalling, bluntly, as someone of the industry. These should all have been withdrawn a long time ago. I think a count of 50 deaths associated with a product would pretty much kill any 4,500, 5,000 in the US alone.
Okay. Look, you spent a good portion of your adult life with a place you said you loved. And actually, you learned a lot. You went on to be a very successful entrepreneur that. You never had any complaints. You were there. You left under good terms. Why would that, why would a place, an institution that when you were there stood for the highest, you know, quality and folks trying to do what's their best thing, why would that institution turn to basically support something that you now say is not safe?
I have no explanation. So all I can say is I do not recognize the behavior of any of the pharmaceutical companies specifically in respect of the COVID-19 vaccines. I'm afraid they're all behaving badly, and I have no idea why they're doing it.
Let's go back to this not necessary, your second point. Point to me the data for both adolescents and school children. And children, why do you say, Dr. Mike Eden, that these are not necessary to have them vaccinated at all?
Yes. So one of the things I mentioned last week is that there was an exaggeration about the lethality of this virus. You know, a couple of things. You know, one is it was, you know, much worse than anything we've seen before. And second, that almost everybody was susceptible. Now, the reality is it is worse for our seniors, people over 70 who already have chronic illnesses of some kind. They are at greater risk of becoming ill and dying. But if you're younger than 70, here's the point, and this came from one of your best published, Dr. Ioannidis, I think, of Stanford. And he has shown that if you're under 70 and otherwise fit and well, you're at less risk from COVID-19 mortality than from influenza. And this continues as you get younger and younger, the gap grows. So with young children under 15, they're much more likely to die of seasonal influenza than COVID-19. It's a rare event, but it does occur with influenza. But in Britain, for example, I think there wasn't a single child under 13 or 14 who was previously well. Not a single one who died. Not one. So they're not, healthy young children are not at risk from dying from this virus. And consequently, you shouldn't give them a medical intervention, let alone one, unfortunately, that does have these safety liabilities, which I think are caused by design, by making your body express this coagulant spike protein.
Dr. Eden, we only got about a minute left. What would you recommend to the mothers out there, mothers and fathers, but particularly mothers, to get more information to make their own judgment? What would you recommend they go to? Where do you recommend they go to get more information about this?
I would go to the website of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. You'll find good information by Dr. Peter McCulloch, one of America's most famous cardiorenal specialists, and he and his team have put together some good guidelines on treatment and on risks. But finally, I would say, don't allow your children to be given this vaccine. They do not need it, and I think it's dangerous for them.
Dr. Eden, how do people get more access to you? Social media, YouTube, all that. How do they get website? How do they get to you?
I have found that I've been so heavily censored that I don't run my own website, but there's a guy called Robin Monotti, M-O-N-O-T-T-I. He's got a great Telegram site, and I tend to push stuff out through Robin's portal.
Okay, Raheem, we'll put that in the thing. Dr. Eden, I want to thank you for taking the time today. It's been extraordinary. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.